During the course and tenure of this podcast, which is still recovering from the internal bleeding caused by the 8th-year birthday spankings, we have had the opportunity to say goodbye to various cohorts. Under normal circumstances, this would be the opportunity for us to yank skeletons out of closets and utterly demolish the ever-loving daylights out of the dearly departed. There's a sense of pride we take in figuratively and literatively stabbing their shit in the fuck. Because that's the kind of sick and perverted people we are. Of course, kick a man when he's down. It's the best time. If you're not gonna kick a man when he's down, don't kick him when he's up, either. Fucker. Tonight is different for two reasons. First, and least relative to the situation, I had Greek food for dinner, and that shit is more delicious than anything you had for dinner. Fact. But second, and of far more import, is the reality that it's because it's none other than Cole who is making her exit. And that sucks. And blows. In all the worst possible ways. Not in those dirty ways you snicker about when you're a teenager watching Spaceballs, making thinly veiled references during the Mega Maid scene, and hoping your dad isn't listening, not realizing that your dad is a million times more filthy than you could ever possibly imagine, given that you are the product of his semen. You are not a fucking Cabbage Patch Kid. Where was I? Oh yeah, so anyway. Cole has announced her need to take an exit from the show, and her role as co-host. There is a fairly rational and logical explanation for this out on the Twitters, but I'm pretty sure that it's just a front for the fact that Jacob let rip during one episode too many, and she was all like, "This is whack. I'm out of here. Game over." Game over indeed. Cole, you've been an amazing co-host. Entertaining, intelligent, hilarious, and still my favorite podcasting voice of all time. The door will always be open, and we hope you're able to come back to us. Once the fumes clear from Jacob's last round of air pollution, holy hell, were you eating refried beans and broccoli together or something? Speaking of opening doors, for the love of all that is holy, crack a window. Haven't you ever heard of the Geneva Convention? I promise you, if you'd gone after the Greek food like I did, this would not be a problem. Actually, I think I ate one too many grape leaves. I know. Salad is what food eats. Sorry to any vegans listening. Not really sorry. I'm having a steak in your honor later this week. It'll be glorious. Anyway, in honor of Cole's leave-taking, we will now intone the dirge that is the ceremonial signal of departure.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Party cast episode. We got Purnell, we got Tim, we got Chris. How is everybody doing?
Absolute garbage.
Yeah, that's the theme. That is the running theme. Just things are fucking shit right now.
Speaking of garbage, who likes the Nokia?
Oh, shit. I got to put my garbage out.
Yeah, I put my garbage out already.
Don't forget trash to include night. Your Engage.
Yeah. Engage night.
Oh, that poor system. I've never even played one. We used to sell them at KB Toys. That was about the gist of it. Like, I would see them on the shelf. I'd question who in their right mind would buy this piece of shit. And no one really came in and bought the piece of shit. So, in a sense,
I wanted one because they had an Elder Scrolls game for it, and I was like, portable Elder Scrolls.
Now you have a Switch.
Yeah, exactly.
The funny part is, like, I was about to say, like, it doesn't make sense to be a portable Elder Scrolls, but then I realized, no, we just weren't ready yet. The Switch makes it possible, though. They have to take concessions, right? Or they have to actually, like, reduce some of the functionality.
Oh, yeah, no, it was apparently terrible. I mean, apparently it was an unforgivable game, but I mean, I still wanted it.
Are you one of those people that has, like, every version of Skyrim ever released?
No, I only have two. I have the Switch version, I have the PS4 version, and that's all I need.
Solid.
And then you're going to have to get the new one coming out this fall that has fishing.
What? Fish?
Yeah, I think that's... I'll get it. If it comes, I don't know if it's coming out on Switch.
It makes me wonder now, has it eclipsed Resident Evil 4 as being the most ported game?
Has to.
I remember Resident Evil 4 was like the big dog. It was like, how many places can we see Resident Evil 4? I'm starting to think Skyrim should have eclipsed it by now, because it's been on like three console generations.
Generations, yeah.
And that's just freaking in my mind. Like, how in the world does that game get that much mileage? And my belief is that it sells well every time. It's not like it hits a niche audience of people or just the people who weren't around on the original. It's like it resells to all the originals plus new people.
Yeah, it just grows.
Call it a bad decision.
It grows exponentially. I don't know. I mean, I love the game, but I don't understand it.
It's like the
anniversary edition is on PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC. So no Switch for the anniversary edition. No fishing for you, Chris. You're gonna have to do it on PS4 instead.
In my controller that I have to talk to.
You can do it, Chris. I believe in you.
Oh man. So yeah, we're dodging the issue. If you heard the beginning of the show, we are down a co-host. Cole had to step away from the show. Yes, we are down a Cole host.
Hi, Cole.
She needed to step away. Her family needs her. I don't know if she's going to come back and do anything else with us or not. I have no clue what's going on. I'm kind of in the dark, but you three are here. So... sorry.
Inferior products are here. And I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, it is cold.
Let me tell you, yeah. Yeah. Having a family and hobbies means you might have to take indefinite time away from them sometimes.
Indeed.
And I can believe that, because I can say case, if I have no family, but that I think is honestly because of that and the acknowledgement of being around a lot of people that do. I can totally see the juxtaposition of, like, how much free time does Purnell have compared to the free time that these friends have? And it's night and day. So,
yeah, I just got a cat.
There goes all your free time.
He doesn't need me.
He doesn't need you.
Behind me.
He doesn't need you, but he wants you. And when he's like, hey, what are you doing? Your answer is, whatever you want, master.
his thing is, like, he likes to say, hey.
That is a cat's favorite word. Hey.
Translated.
Rolling it.
Or Peaches to Ashley. Well, you can audibly hear her sometimes go, Mom. It is adorable. Like, it's...
I love the mom sound.
Yeah, it's adorable. Mom!
My favorite one is little kitties, because they say wee.
There's always a party with little kitties.
Yeah.
It is a party. It is a party cast. So how is everyone? Cats. Tim, how are you doing? How was your week?
It was awful. It was a terrible week and a half.
Jesus Christ. It couldn't just be a bad week. It's a terrible week. What happened?
No, it was terrible. I don't want to talk about most of it. It was so bad. Things are still... I am still processing. What?
Is it still the school board stuff?
Last night was a school board meeting, yes. So, the meeting convened for about 5 to 6 minutes before it was adjourned, because there was about three people who refused to put masks on, even though it is a New York State requirement that you must be masked within public school buildings. So they adjourned the meeting.
Why weren't they just hauled out, like thrown into the street?
I don't think they have security working these things, you know.
There were three police officers there, two student resource officers, and one deputy from the town. Yeah, I think that might have been the move, just to take those people out. I don't know what's going to happen moving forward. But yeah, after the board hastily adjourned the meeting and left the room, then like all out Lord of the Flies anarchy took place as people decided to hold their own meeting. And then people decided, like, okay, well, we need to try to get these three people to put masks on so we can actually have the meeting and have our discourse and say what we want to say. And that went on for about 20 to 25 minutes before one of the cops was like, okay, meeting's adjourned. You all have to leave.
So the cop basically just said, I'm not dealing with this shit. Get the fuck out.
Yeah, he just said, yep, you all need to leave the building. If you're going to talk, go talk in the parking lot. You got to get out of the building.
Closing time.
Oh no.
Yeah, then I had to herd them all out. So yeah, but like it was something else. And there's a lot more going on around it that is just craziness. But yeah, at the same time, like my child was like sick last weekend. And he was still like kind of sick Monday, so I took him to the doctor and called him off from school. And then it's like, oh, well, okay, he can't go back until he has a negative COVID test or a doctor's note. And the doctor's like, well, it's allergies. I'm like, well, that's great. So he's been off 2 days from school with allergies. And I got his negative COVID test back this afternoon so he can go back tomorrow.
Well, that's
good. So in your home situation, when your son's home sick, does that ultimately end up disrupting like you or the missus or both of yours like situations for work? Or
well, that means I'm not at work. Yeah, basically. And I was off half the day yesterday, the morning. And so I'm like a day and a half behind on work, like in like the busiest part of the year. And that's just the last 2 days. That like last week was a whole other like box of ferrets.
Box of ferrets.
Yeah, it's just like then just gonna nip you. Jump out and get all over. It's just a big mess. I got to get the ferrets back in the box.
Well, the ferrets are fun, though, right? Ferrets are awesome.
They can be, yeah. They're also wily.
But you don't want a whole box of them.
You don't want a whole box of ferrets.
It gets a little chaotic at that point. Hard to control.
Like two ferrets is a lot of trouble all on their own.
It's like fudge-covered Oreos. Like, one or two is amazing, but the whole box, no.
Pandemonium. Whole box of Oreos. You can't handle that shit.
So yeah, you know, I also had to step away from something last week because of reasons. I don't know. Family related, but also related to people not getting a goddamn vaccine at this point and being extremely fucking stupid about it. And I'm sorry, I'm gonna let you know at this point. You're gonna hear it from me. But only if I care about you. If I don't care about you, then I don't care. But if you're my friend,
it's time for the ferrets.
Then you're gonna
care about sick them boys.
It's time for the ferrets. Yeah. So
unvaccinated ferrets.
Among other things. Yeah. And
unvaccinated folks are back on the menu, boys. Well, I thought about that. There's like that old like barbecue sauce commercial. This stuff's made in New York. Oh, salsa. This stuff's made in New York City.
New York City.
But yeah, I'm like that now too. Like, and I'm along the lines of what Tim is saying, so it's not as tangent. But so in my area, we're slowly getting to that idea of like that potential for having to do like triages in hospitals and stuff because they can't keep up with garbage. And I'm like, I was prepared for that. I understand that was coming because I've been paying attention to people, and I was quoted as pretty much saying, hey, I feel like if you weren't vaccinated and they need to start triaging, you go to the bottom of the list flat out. And the person was like, so you'd advocate for people to be denied care because they ain't doing the same thing you did? You're a piece of shit. I was like, you goddamn right I'm a piece of shit. I'm like, what do you expect? Like, I'm going to own that. That's what makes me a piece of shit so big. You've had healthcare officials requesting for months to do the thing that they believe is best. The actual professionals, mind you, for the exact reason we're arguing right now. So now that I accept and acknowledge that this is what's going on, I am the piece of shit because I didn't expect to have my cake and eat it too. Acknowledging, by the way, that's a stupid euphemism statement, but I like saying it anyway. Should be denied care if that's the case. If they need to determine who can make who they're best going to be able to serve, you get lost. Go home and trust your immune system to beat the shit.
The thing I don't understand is, like, if they don't want to listen to us, that's one thing. Why don't you listen to your fellow anti-maskers who are dying and saying they should have gotten the fucking vaccine?
Because they're dying free men.
Well, the thing is, when they die, they're officially a part of the agenda. They've officially converted to the agenda, you see. When you're on your deathbed, a guy comes in and offers you a check for your surviving members of your family. You just say, I wish I got vaccinated. I got
the vaccine. Well, there's 50 million for your family.
It's like, because the thing about it is, like, at the end of the day, most of this has no logical bearing anymore. Like, it really doesn't. When someone comes to you and says, oh, so now you're telling me that when someone gets lung cancer, they should be denied treatment too. I'm like, how many jumps on the hopscotch board do you have to take to go from a preventable, spreadable illness, or at least reduced spreadable illness, to a self-inflicted condition that you can't spread to others, resulting in just one more space of a hospital being taken up, as opposed to a potential for many? Like, there are so many leaps you have to take to go from, well,
we're making a lot of leaps tonight. There's,
you better believe it.
I don't even know where we are right now. We were talking about school board meetings. Now we're talking about hospitals and lung cancer. I am so fucking lost. We should just get to reviews. Is everyone ready?
I just gave you the segue.
Speaking of plagues, first game to talk about tonight is Tales of Iron, developed by Oddbug Studio, published by United Label, released September 17th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, Switch, and PC for $24.99. Tales of Iron is an epic RPG adventure with punishingly brutal combat. As Reggie, heir to the Rat Throne, you must embark on a perilous quest to reclaim your kingdom, explore a deceivingly, charmingly world, and assemble a brave band of companions, banish the merciless Frog Clan once and for all. Pernell, tell us about your time with Tales of Iron.
So Tales of Iron, you play as the prince of a rat kingdom, and honestly, despite the fact that it eventually gets to become pretty dark, it is an adorable game. Reggie, I just pronounce it Reggie.
I couldn't figure out how to say the name, so I just went with Reggie.
As he communicates with everyone in the game, these characters do not use words. They don't speak. Instead, when they talk to each other, they squeak like mice would squeak, and it's all told in pictures, which is freaking cute. And it took me back to an old game called Bangayo, and there was like one character in that game that spoke in pictures, and that was like my favorite character in the whole game. So that was an immediate point for this game right there. So that's how the communication works. And then the concept of this game is that early on, they tell the story of the frogs, because apparently this is the first time I've ever played where the frogs are like the evil the evil people in the world. But the frogs were banished from the rat kingdom to the swamps. But the hero who pretty much did the banishing became king and got old. So in the process of transitioning power from himself to his son, after an intro that kind of trains you on how the game plays, he is assassinated. This is not a sport. This is literally the game intro. He is assassinated, and you, the main character, gets pretty much left for dead by this frog army. He wakes up, sees everything in complete ruin, dead rats everywhere. And he realized that he is now having like the worst first day coronation of his life. So he is officially on the process of trying to clean up, rescue, avenge the whole nine yards, this frog kingdom, and banish them back to whence they came. And that is the gameplay initiation, which kicks things off. And the way he actually gets to operate, though, it's very Dark Souls 2D-esque anyway. You have a light weapon, a heavy weapon, and a ranged weapon. All of these things have various weight limits, which can increase your weight level, which, as you can probably guess if you've played games like Dark Souls and such, the more you weigh, the heavier you are, which it makes it harder for you to move around and dodge when you're in actual combat. However, it is also cool in the sense that whereas in like Dark Souls, you had to worry about, you know, there was like two buttons per weapon use or whatever. You had to charge it up, and there's like the parry version of it and all that. And this game is literally just the right bumper is your light weapon. The right trigger is your heavy weapon. You can swing it by just pressing the button, and you can bless you by not doing that. you can actually, hold it down to like a sort of charge attack. Heavy weapons can be used to like take down enemy shields, and also like certain barricades and things of that nature. And the range weapon is exactly as it sounds. Like you fire it, you don't have to aim it. It just knows where to shoot, and you can just take down like flying insects or whatever, or also just like attack normal guys. Now, an interesting aspect of the combat in this game that certain other games don't generally have is that they do have blocking and parrying, but in addition to like normal enemy attacks, some enemies also have unblockable attacks as well as parryable attacks. And when they do one or the other, the game actually gives you visual cues to indicate which one they're going to do. Red, you know, like barking or like red circle indicates they're doing an unblockable attack. Get the hell out of the way. Figure out what they're going to do and get out of the way. The yellow one, however, indicates that they're going to come at you. You can't dodge it. Well, you can dodge it, but you can't really push through them. However, you can parry the attack. And if you parry it, you kind of lock horns with them, push them back, and you get some free hits in. That is to say, though, don't get too accustomed to that, because early on it makes you seem like that's pretty much how all attacks are choreographed. But in reality, they are not. They will also do attacks that aren't choreographed, and you just kind of watch for them and dodge and block and what have you. And the game itself is not easy. I've been getting my ass kicked from here to El Segundo, and it is actually okay, because despite that happening, save points are fairly frequent. I've been pretty happy with how the save point system works in this game. Healing works just like how like Dark Souls is games, but instead of a Estus flask, you have a bug juice flask. Instead of individual consumptions, you have a volume meter, where as you drink it, your health goes up and the volume of bug juice goes down. When you run out of bug juice, so do you run out of healing. But as you kill insects on the world map, come across bug juice coolers, you can harvest them for additional bug juice and refill your goods. Usually there's a bug juice cooler at a number of the rest of the save points, but not all of them. Honestly, I've been finding this game to be very entertaining. Like, it started out being like kind of depressing, where it's like everybody's like, everything's just terrible, but eventually things start to move on the up and up, and it goes from you like, you know, trying to just like figure out if anybody survived to like rebuilding your kingdom.
Fucking yeah.
And whatnot. And then eventually going off to avenge your kingdom. But the one downside I've really come across, well, two downsides, that depends on how you look at it, is I know a lot of people tend to play these games occasionally, like to talk about builds and things of that nature. Like, this is the weapon setup I use, and it's the best for me. However, in this game, it's kind of hard to employ that, because you do get blueprints, which you can give to your brother, who's a blacksmith, and he will give you new weapons and armor or whatever. And sometimes you can also find goods and treasure chests. And when you're at a storage container, you can mix and match your gear to give yourself a loadout. However, none of the equipment in this game has an actual name. It's just equipment, which isn't really bad per se, unless you want to describe what you're doing to anyone else. Because you're not going to be able to say, you know, that shield with the four crosses on it, and it's a circular one, but it's under the light category. But there's also one like it in the medium category, but that one's slightly larger, so be careful not to use that one. Like, you really won't be doing much descriptions for, like, what builds you're using to others. It's not going to really matter when you're playing personally, because you're going to just look at the meters and go, this is what I want. This
has, you know what does matter?
You got some biddies!
No, Root Beer's My Jam subbed for the 27th month, saying, I'm so sad about Cole leaving. Who the hell is going to review window washer simulator games now?
Oh, man.
Oh, jeez.
Maybe one of us will do one just for like an honor of Cole.
This game, window washer simulator. Power washing simulator 2022. Who wants that one? Oh, I requested this. That's good. I'll request it this weekend.
I'm not buying an Xbox until you get a new co-host.
That's really damn funny.
Like, 'cause you know it's coming. Like, splash. the Xbox deluge. So, honestly, I'm still just holding up for an Xbox to show up at Target. Because if that happens, I might consider it. Because I'm sitting on like $1,400 in credit to that store. So the day it happens, give me one. Well, I was exploiting that credit thing for years, and I just stacked it up. So
God damn,
dude. I was just sitting there ready to be used. But I use it in case of emergencies. And I'm like, if I ever see an Xbox Series X there, I might like, if I decide to just jump on it, it won't kill me because I'm spending money I've had been sitting on. So whatever.
True, fair.
But back to the game.
Yeah, back to Tales of Iron. I have a gripe about Tales of Iron. Like, it's fucking hard.
Too many tales? Well, this is a description. Brutally hard combat. No, Dark Souls.
Like, I expect a hard game, but like when one arrow takes away 3/4 of my health, that's just unfair. Yeah.
And while there is like the ability to like kind of start getting more health by getting food from your brother, you don't get to that for quite a bit. Like you have to like get past a number of intro boss battles who don't really feel like intro boss battles because that's hours of gameplay. And then eventually get to the point where your kingdom is back on the up and up. And then you get agrees to feed your fan, get yourself food cooked. And that helps you build up your character. But yeah, I agree with you in that aspect. Like it's not, when it's you punishing. Get to the nitty gritty of it, you have to be ready. Like I got to a fight, I eventually got past it, but the fight that gave me the biggest problem was like it was the last fight I had to do before I had enough money to start on the kingdom rebuilding effort. And it's like a frog encampment. And as you go on there, it's like you're fighting like two frogs with like the hand with like the maces, and they hit hard, but I was gotten better at dealing with them. And then you gotta fight two frogs that use the heavy shields. I've gotten better at dealing with them, so not a big deal. And then this dickbag comes out with a giant spear and his little hard-ass croaker hat. And suffice to say, he railroaded me multiple times. It was brutally depressing. It was like demoralizing beatdown that I was getting from this jackass. But I kept persevering. And honestly, due to how the save point works out there, it really broke down to like, okay, beat the intro fight, go save, and then I can try as many times as I want on this thing because it's like it's the save point's like one room over. So I was like, okay, I can just keep retrying until I get it right. Now, if that save point were like 5 screens over or something, well, that would have sucked ass. But I'm okay with the repeating until I get it right, so long as they don't make me waste a bunch of time getting to the point where I have to retry. No. And eventually, I overcame it, but. Yeah, this game isn't, if you want to come into this thing and you're like, and this isn't mentioned to you, Joe, this is like general for like the listener. If you come into this game wanting to just kind of like have like a power fantasy where you just blitz through all the enemies,
nope.
Ain't happening here. You ain't getting here. It says Tales of Iron, but your ass is grass.
It's pretty though. I love great visual style.
Yes, it is. Like all across the board, like the style in this game is awesome. And it's especially appealing because this is another one of those games where I genuinely feel like when you was like, you want to review this game? I was like, okay. And I started playing. I was like, wow, I misjudged the shit out of this. This is really good.
Like, I think you'd learn by now, Purnell.
I'll never learn. I'm still human until the drugs kick in.
Well, $25 on Tales of Iron. What do you think?
I think it's a genuine buy unless you're the type who just straight up can't handle like, you know, wash, rinse, repeat on, like, you know, getting your ass beat. But if you can, it's a definite buy. There's charm for days and it's a lot of fun, too.
Cool beans. All right. Next up is Omen of Sorrow, developed by A1 Games, published by East Asia Soft, released September 15th on Xbox One and PC for $19.99. In a hidden underworld ruled by creatures of the night, a new terror has awakened. Omen of Sorrow brings monsters of horror, literature, and mythology together for a fighting game experience unlike any other. Inspired by numerous arcade classics, but offering its own unique innovations and mature aesthetics, Omen of Sorrow positively bleeds style. Tim, tell us about Omen of Sorrow.
Bleed style. I don't know about that. That's saying something, putting that out there. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Pardon me. There it is. Omen of Sorrow is, it's kind of a, I'll say, low-budget fighting game because, it's coming out for $20. It's not trying to hit a stellar price point. So you have a game where you have about a dozen fighters with a horror bent on it. So there is a guy who is obviously Dracula, though he's not called Dracula, and Vampire Lady and Mummy Man and Frankenstein's Monster and a Hunchback and like a Van Helsing vampire hunter dude, and like a demon lady and a lady who's a gargoyle, I think. or otherwise she is also a demon of a different variety. So that's the theme of the characters, is you're looking at like horror monsters, a horror scene going on here. It definitely does not look like a game, like a $60 release, that's for sure. But that can be fine. So it's a four button system. You got your heavy punch, your light punch, your heavy kick, your light kick, with a couple, I think the throw button and a EX button is the other one. So it's not really a truly four buttons. There is two other buttons that are involved. And you have a couple meters that are on the screen. You have 1 meter that builds up, as you're doing shit, to empower your super special moves. And then there's another meter that kind of, waxes and wanes depending on how you are behaving in the battle. So if you are being more aggressive, it will fill up. And if you are being more defensive, it will swing the other way. And going one way or the other will open up different, kind of ability, counter abilities and other tactics that you can use, in battle. One of the things, that's unfortunate is, it's hard to know how any of that shit works because it's not like the game explains it. I have been spoiled rotten by, Guilty Gear in particular, but many fighting games that I've played in recent years that really have started going out of their way to be more accessible to noobs, because fighting games are a pain in the ass. If you've been playing fighting games for many, many years, there's a lot you just inherently will understand and look for in a fighting game, just off the bat, and like trying to, roll in new people on that can definitely be a challenge. And this game makes no strides to make your life easy. There is, of course, a training room, but there's no kind of like mission mode. There's no kind of like, tutorial progression thing that's like, okay, this is how these moves work. These are the mechanics you need to watch out for. This is like how your meter works and how these aforementioned counters work. When you pull up a list of your special moves, because these characters, emanate from gothic horror and like different parts of, generally speaking, Europe. A lot of their, like, it'll have their list of special moves, but it's not like the name of a special move is conducive to what it actually do, especially when it's like written in ancient Egyptian or, vampire script or whatever. I'm just looking at the motions for the controller that you are handing me. There is a character based on Dr. Jekyll / Mr. Hyde, elegantly named Dr. Hyde, who has a mechanic where he can mix up different like injections to stab into himself that will have different effects. And there's no way to find that stuff out other than just kind of using it and experimenting, because the game doesn't say like, okay, this is what this does. And that was a super nice thing that I saw in Strive in particular, but in more recent fighting games. This game is actually a few years old. It came out on PlayStation like a while ago.
For the updated release on Xbox, the previously downloadable Bloody Countess, I'm not trying to pronounce that fucking name, now joins the main roster alongside a massive blood dragon at her command. So
yes, that was the first character I played as. And she does have a massive blood dragon that is at her command. Can confirm. That is in there from the go. The game is not like reaching out to pull you up to its level. I dropped something. I will say, it's got some solid bones and it has some solid ideas. Like, the characters are distinct from one another and have, their own particular tactics, like the aforementioned blood dragon, like the aforementioned, like mixing up potions, like Mummy Man, Imhotep. His lower half and his upper half kind of move separately from one another a little bit, because he's only kind of bound together by like wisps of sand. So that can create interesting opportunities there. But I had a difficult time, like, this sounds really harsh, but like having a lot of fun with it. Because like just trying to get into like a smooth groove with any character and trying to like make combos link up together was not really working so well for me. And that's, you know, kind of important for me for a fighting game.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, it is, you know, again, it is a $20 game. So there's not like the plethora of modes that you might expect from a bigger budget, from a, you know, game from a more renowned publisher that, you know, has been building these games for years and just throws that shit in there. But yeah, it's just like, there's arcade, there is survival mode, there is training, and then there is online versus. And that's, you know, that's it. There's all that's going on there. So it is pretty bare bones.
Shout out for having online, though.
It does have online. Yeah, I mean, you kind of need that. You got to have it. Otherwise, you know, you know, otherwise you need people around and able to come over to your house. So hopefully your friends vaccinate. but yeah, it looks, you know, it looks okay. I mean, it certainly fucking looks like it was built in Unreal Engine. I'm pretty sure I saw that it was, you know, it looks okay. It plays okay. I think kind of the problem overall with the game is it like has ideas that are like, it has a solid foundation, and then like none of the rest of it comes together like really smoothly or in a elegant fashion to make it like really feel good as a fighting game. No. So I think that people who are maybe a bit more casual with their fighters are not going to get much out of it. I think that people who, you know, people that are more hardcore into fighters will, I don't know, they're psychopaths and they will find fun in just about anything. Like they're always just looking for stuff to shit around with. So they might get a little bit more out of it. $20 might be a tough sell given kind of my feelings on the overall quality and scope of the game. Even if it is not shooting for the stars, as I was browsing around before this, I saw it is currently $6 on the Epic Store. So that seems like a good price right there.
I know, but it's on sale on Xbox for the next week for $16, so it's not as cheap.
Yeah. I assume when you said PC, that meant it was coming to Steam, because it seems like it's coming soon to Steam. It's also like on East Asia Soft's like publisher page, it's listed as being free to play, which I don't think is going to be correct, because I don't know how they would monetize it.
But yeah, I don't know about that one. I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's. I think that's just not supposed to be there.
That might just be a typo.
But yeah, I think it might be worth a try at the right price for a fighting game fan, and it is something that probably a non-fighting game fan can just pass on altogether.
Sounds fair. Yeah. All right, next up is Good Night, developed by Team Good Night, published by Doublethink Games, released September 17th on Steam for $14.99. One-button bullet hell game. Use your agility and quickness to dodge bullets, battle in different mysterious hells against giant bosses, featuring stunning visual impact and original metal soundtracks. Prepare to die in metal hell. Chris, did you die in metal hell?
Hang on, question. How is night spelled?
With a K.
K-N.
It is with a K.
Yeah.
Good Knight. Yes. Not Good Knight.
Yeah. Okay, got it. Not to be confused with the Switch game, Good Night Night. Which is good N-I-G-H-T, K-N-I-G-H-T.
Okay.
It's on my wish list. I don't know that game. Yeah. They're running out of video game names, man, I swear.
So how is Good Knight?
Oh, Good Knight, man. It's it's a thing, isn't it? Okay, so first off, I should say this is a bit of a disclaimer that the game is in early access currently, and like about 60% of it is not done yet. There's a lot of modes they're working on right now. Honestly, I'm not even sure they're going to get around to all of them. But the game itself, the core game, is fully playable. So that's really the only thing I can speak to. They're working on online modes. They're working on build your own stages. They're also working on, like, you know, art galleries, like just a whole bunch of cool stuff. So, yeah. So we're going to talk about just the game that I played.
Yeah.
It's one of those interesting genre-bending kind of things that's really a challenge to describe, except to just basically say, you know, what you do in it. Because it brands itself as kind of a bullet hell. And it does have bullet hell. It has lots and lots of bullets coming at you in patterns. But it is not a shmup. It does not even follow the Beaker Reloaded definition of a shmup. So therefore, canonically, it cannot be a shmup. It is a ring around the rosy kind of thing, I guess. Or I don't know, what's a game where you run around a thing? I don't know. I'm trying to think. It's an orbital adventure. You are a knight who in the field, you know, like the actual, like, well, you don't even have to be a knight, there's selectable characters, but anyways, there's a stage, and in the center of the stage is a thing, and your task is to run around that thing, and that thing has to protect you from all of the tons and tons of bullets that are coming at you from every side. So it's like it's a run and hide kind of game, actually. I don't know.
A dodge 'em up,
yeah, but like, because your character, here's the thing though, is that it's a bit of a misnomer to call it a one button gameplay kind of game, because if you play it on a controller, there are two buttons.
And those, you can play fucking it with liars.
I know. And if you play it with a mouse, then I don't know what you're doing. But here's the thing, there's no in-game option to switch from mouse to controller, and it doesn't do that thing that most Steam games do, where it's like if you start fiddling around with a controller, it switches your controls automatically. So you have to fully exit out of the game, double-click on it, and make sure you don't click at all after that, and then start pushing buttons on a controller so that it'll read your controller. So I'm hoping that's something that they fix, because that feels like a thing that's broken.
Yeah, I would imagine that's going to be addressed, considering it's still early access. I know they are saying that they're planning to be in early access for about 3 to 6 months, though we'll see how long that goes.
Yeah. So on a controller, which is the way you should play this, you don't control the character's movements. The character runs around in a perpetual circle. What the button does is it changes his direction. And the other button slows down the whole thing. It's a bullet time button. So that's optional, and it's limited use. What you're mainly going to be concerned with is the primary button. It's not a one button game, but most of it is one button. So the whole thing is that you're running around this boulder or whatever. It's a boulder in the first stage. These things pop up at you from the outer perimeter of the circle, and they start firing just endless streams of bullets at you. But in a pattern that if you can get to the correct side of the rock, you can then dodge, and you know, the bullets will ping off the rock, and then you get to live for another second, maybe. And if you hold down the button instead of simply pushing it to change direction, because obviously you can't just change direction and then you're safe. You might have to start pushing the button rapidly to keep changing directions to keep yourself on one side of the rock, depending on who's on the other side blasting you. But just as assuredly, there will be something blasting you from that side very soon. But if you hold the button, it slows your movement slightly, so you can kind of time your movement. And if you hold it down for about a second, then he starts firing off bullets out into the distance. Also, if you push the button in proximity of one of the things that are shooting you, then he might stab it with his sword and it will die and go away. And that's less bullets to deal with. Yay. unless you're playing the game on pacifist mode, which they have, which only concerns itself with dodging. You don't get to fight back. You only dodge, which that version actually works right now. So yeah, it's that way. And then, you know, like as if it were a shooter. Once you're done with all the enemy waves, then you have to fight a boss. And so the scene goes from like kind of being a little bit of a three-quarter angle, so you can see all the sides of the circle, right? And, you know, you're kind of, you know, you get to see like the whole field at the same time. When you go to a boss, it actually switches to like a more like, it turns it on its side, so you kind of can't see anything anymore, and that makes it even harder. So the camera will change angles on you sometimes. But of course, if you survive, then you get to move on. There's four total large stages in the normal mode, and then there's a hard mode, and then there's a fifth stage in the normal mode that you can't unlock until you beat hard mode, which is odd. There's an unlockable stage that is not unlockable until you beat fully hard mode. Which, by the way, I think it's like there's a normal mode and then a hard difficulty, and the hard difficulty is the default. There's no easier difficulty. So I like that they don't mince words in that. They also point out that the game is a Filipino developed game. It's even in the title, the subtitle underneath on the top screen, and they use like kind of Filipino horror imagery and stuff in the game too, and it's actually quite nice. Soundtrack's good. It is metal, but it's like it's kind of like Falcom style metal, so it's like there'll be chuggy guitars, but then also just like a pretty violin laid over the top of it. So it's not like a death metal kind of thing. At least none of the tracks I heard. But they seem very proud of it. So, and quite sounds nice in my brand new headphones. So, well, but then everything does now.
Yeah, new headphones are always fun. Mine are starting to fall apart already. I just bought them a few months ago.
Oh, no.
The ear, like the cuff, is already starting to pull from its binding. And
oh, you can usually get those replaced.
I'd have to like glue it back on. I don't know. Fucking Sony quality people. They are Sony headphones. They're oh god. $15 on Goodnight. What do you think?
Forever.
Huh?
I was gonna say $15 on Goodnight. What are you thinking?
I think that it's a good game. You know, just be aware that it is extremely hard and you will die constantly. Like, your life expectancy until you like really get to know like the gameplay is less than a second, and that's a little jarring because it keeps, you know, moving you between the game over screen and the retry screen. Now, you don't really lose any progress. It basically auto saves before every enemy wave, so
that's good.
Yeah, you're given it feels very much like it's like you've got save state cheats, but they're actually baked into the game. They even warn you at the very beginning of the game that it is a frustration experience. Like, they say, this game will frustrate you. Please don't get into it if you don't care for being frustrated. So, you know, if high difficulty like that is your thing, I think the game looks really pretty. It sounds really pretty. And ultimately, it is fun. It's only a buyer beware because of the nature of what it is, and that's kind of what I'm here to tell you about. If that sounds good to you, I consider this a buy it, especially considering all of the stuff they're working on. You know, somebody looking for an actual bullet hell like shoot 'em up should probably think hard on it, because it doesn't really play that way. It's more like a puzzle game almost.
All right, well, moving on, we're going to keep with the bullet hell theme with Skatebird.
Yeah.
Skatebird, developed by Glass Bottom Games and Plastic Fern Studios, published by Glass Bottom Games, released September 16th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and Amazon Luna for $19.99, also available as part of Xbox Game Pass on Xbox and Windows 10. You're a lonely little bird, and your big friend has hung up their board for good. Their job sucks, and lately, they're barely ever home to play with you. You're gonna fix all that with the power of being a chill little skateboarding bird. You may be tiny, but the more you skate, the more friends you'll make. Birds will come check out your park, help you make more parks, and together you'll somehow fix big friend's life. And above all else, skate birds try their best. Tim, tell us about your time with Skatebird.
They do try their best. All right, so if I were to really dumb this down, Skatebird is Tony Hawk's pro skater with birds. That's what it is going for. The comparisons are undeniable. It is using the same control scheme, pretty much.
please tell me that there's an actual Hawk
named
Tony.
You know, I didn't play the whole game, but I would not be surprised.
That would be great. Just the hawk named Tony. Tony the Hawk.
I can't believe they wouldn't do that. so yeah, you have, you know, kick flip tricks are on your button to the left, grab tricks are on your button to the right, you know, platform dependent, grinds are up there on your triangle or Y or X or whatever the hell is up there, depending on your controller. And you use the bottom button to do ollies. Though one of the things you can do in this game, because you are a bird, is you can essentially double jump. You can ollie it once and then ollie again in midair. So that's a thing that makes, that's a big difference between the human Tony Hawk and the bird hawk named Tony, potentially. So, yeah, you go into the game and then you get to customize your little bird. They have a surprising, you know, just given the amount of games I fucking play where you go to customize your character and like all this shit is like locked up until later, you know, like you get many, many species of bird to choose from. You get many different hats to choose from, you know, eyewear, you know, capes, like little bow ties, like all kinds of shit to dress up your bird with. And I just want to say that's fantastic. To have that, you know, not just like, oh, you got to unlock it all, but there is yet still stuff to unlock. So that's pretty great as well. There will be just like, there'll be little things hidden around the arena that you pick up and they will unlock more, customization items for you. So yeah, the game takes place at a small bird's little, view. So like the first level takes place in a crude skate park made in your owner's bedroom. So, you know, there's a bed there. There's like ramps that go up onto his desk. There is, you know, disgusting things rotting under his bed and clothes strewn about and cups and whatnot. So it's kind of like your little, like, you know, Katamari level. When you start off a Katamari game, you're like that small in the room. Like everything is so very big because you are a wee little bird. Though you do not become a larger bird. You know, it's not like that. You just go off to other levels where, you know, things are also large relative to your size. So you'll skate around and there'll, you know, be obstacles made out of real world items there. But then, of course, there will just be like ramps around for you to go up and pull off some tricks. But kind of the basic structure of the game is that there's like quest giver birds around the arena. And one of the biggest fucking problems I have with this game is that like it really needs like an icon above said birds so you know where they are. Because sometimes they're hard to pick out because they're just sitting there. And sometimes, but it's like, you know, like, okay, in the first level, I did a bunch of quests like down kind of on the floor area and I did some up top and then I went back down to the floor and I'm like, okay, I am not seeing, must have skated around for like 10 minutes, like looking for, like trying to figure out what to do next until I found like this side part of the level where there was a bird hanging out waiting to give me a quest. And I was just like, God damn it. That like, just put like an air above their head, you know, just so I know where they are. Don't rely on me doing, you know, being intelligent because you can't. just help the man along. But anyway, they will give you quests, which will range from, well, you know, there's one that is collecting five letters that are floating in the air to spell something out. The word is not skate, but, you know, might as well be. it's like, oh, you need to clear such and such gap. You need to grind on all of these, you know, all the dishes under the bed to clean them up. You need to stamp on these points of a blanket to magically you need to attach balloons to these corners of this blanket to make it fold up onto the bed. So stuff like that, kind of whack. It's somewhat akin to like Tony Hawk 4 to reach way back at this point where they put you in kind of an open world and you go around and find the various quests giving people and then you would do the tricks there. It's not a thing where you get 2 minutes to go into the level and then, you know, clear as many goals as you want. It is not that. Except at this, the birds appear in a specific order. They're not just all standing around waiting to give you quests. There seems to be just only one that's active at any given time. So that's like all fine. The problem is that the game doesn't play great. And because of that, it can be really fucking frustrating. Just like it's tough to put my finger on exactly what it is other than just kind of a general wave of the hand of the physics feel completely fucking off. Not completely off, because like it's still playable, but I would find myself in situations where it's like I'm having trouble getting over this ramp. You know, my bird is going off it in a direction that is not anticipated or expected. I'm having a tough time clearing gaps. I'm getting stuck in weird parts of the level that I don't know if they expected me to get stuck in, and I'm having a really hard time getting out. Like, or this area is narrow, and between the bird like bumping into the walls here and the camera, I'm just kind of like thrashing around back and forth and not having a good time. Though I will say, my child was having a great time watching me struggle with that. And he thought it was hilarious watching the bird helplessly flap around or get tossed off the board or whatever. He thought that shit was great. He thought that was hilarious. Me, not so much. Like, when I'm trying to, you know, land on rails or like get air off of ramps and I feel like I'm just not getting quite enough height, or I go off like the wrong way, so I'm not like spinning through the air. I just kind of go straight up and it's weird and awkward. And I ended up being a lot more frustrated than I certainly wanted to be with a game that is like extremely charming and like, you know, just almost there. It's fun. It's a good idea. It is like got a lot of solid humor in it, but just the actual skateboarding just does not feel great. Like just the way the tricks go together. You can only use the thumbstick, like the analog stick, to control the bird. You can't use the directional pad, which since the inception of Tony Hawk, I have been a D-pad user, so it is just really awkward for me to use a analog stick, and I really wish that the D-pad was an option big time. That, I don't know, maybe that alone would help me overcome some of the issues, but like just kind of the way your bird jostles around sometimes and catches on things unexpectedly and flies off of things in unexpected directions. Like, I think the idea of having the double jump is cool. Like, the game, unlike Tony Hawk, like you when you land a trick, like you have a timer that counts down for you to start hitting another trick to extend your combo. You don't have to like, you know, revert off the ramp and then manual over to something else and then go off of that. So it is more forgiving with how you like rack up combos, which is good. But I don't know. It's a bummer in other ways.
As it stands, $20. What are you thinking?
I mean, it's on Game Pass, so it's certainly worth a fucking try on Game Pass, and you should, because yeah. I think it's worth the download and worth looking at and worth having some laughs. I think it's a try it anyway. I hope they polish it up a little bit, but I do think it is a pretty entertaining game, but can definitely be frustrating with how it kind of controls and plays at times. So I kind of hope it gets, you know, shined up a little bit and really turns into something a bit more solid, because there's a lot of good there.
A lot of potential.
Yeah. That I really earnestly enjoy.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it for you, Tim. We will let you get going.
God. I'm going to go the fuck to sleep.
Have fun.
I'm going to have so much fun sleeping. Thank you very much. Good night with an N.
Any not final words?
That's it. Just good night without the K.
Sounds good.
Always without the K.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Oops 2, developed by Independent Art Software, published by Wild River Games, released August 31st on Xbox One and PS4 for $14.99, Switch for $19.99. Stay busy juggling increasingly exciting and complex recipes in this fast and furious cooking game based on the colorful and successful feature film Oops 2. Purnell, what is Oops 2?
Oops 2 is a single-player overview. That's the game.
Cool. What do you think?
However, so for anybody who's like, what the fudge is Overcooked? My first statement is, what the hell? Where have you been sleeping for the last couple of years? But I will still explain it because this is a review. So in this game, you control one of a variety of animal characters that exist in this movie. You start out with access to one named Dave, and as you progress, you unlock others, which can also be used. From what I could tell, though, they don't play any differently. They're just character skins. The goal for every level is to prepare food as ordered by customers and deliver it to them, or rather serve it to them, through the ordering apparatus. So what that would mean is, for example, before I even go into the how you do, what the actual ordering thing is the fact that you are in a kitchen. You have to prepare the food using the equipment that exists within the kitchen and then order, and then like prepare it and then submit it based on the order submitted by the customers. So, for example, let's say a person wanted lettuce. It's pretty easy. You go to the lettuce receptacle, pull out a head of lettuce, go to the cutting board, mash the X button until you're done chopping it, put it in a bowl, put it on the dispenser, boom, you got some points. And if you manage to get it in there before half of the timer runs out on the order, you'll get a little bit of a bonus point bump too, like another 20 points.
I love to go to a restaurant and order lettuce.
Hey, this is the Ark. You take what you can get, baby.
We have also a restaurant on our DoorDash, and one of the items, every time we order, it's just like recommended items is just tomato. Just a fucking tomato.
Sweet. Like, if they're not, I mean, maybe if they're charging like 20 to 30 cents for that tomato, but, or maybe even up to
like, it's like $2. It's just like, yeah, it's literally just a tomato. I don't get it.
I'll just go to the, how many lazy people won't go to a farmer's market? We'll make them pay right here. And I bet people buy a tomato too. Wouldn't be surprised in the least, but I digress. Ain't no buying tomatoes in this game because I guess the points are technically the money, but still, they pay $60 for that bowl of lettuce. And funny enough, they're also paying $60 for more complicated recipes, too. The pricing on this arc is messed up. But there are more complicated recipes. Like, and this may sound hokey, but let's say tomato soup. Tomato soup is literally chopping three tomatoes, putting them in a pot, putting the pot on top of a burner, letting it cook until it's done, taking the pot, pouring the soup into a bowl, and then running it and putting it on the order tray. There's a lot more going on there than it sounds. And that's just to make tomato soup. You'll get a variety of different recipes as you play throughout the game, generally depending on the stage. So you won't be just making one item throughout the entire level all the time. Sometimes they'll mix and match. Sometimes you got to put it in a bowl. Sometimes you got to put it in a glass. Sometimes you got to put it in a blender. Sometimes you got to put it in a pot. Sometimes you just put it right on the plate. But there will always be obstacles and annoyances getting in your way as you do these levels. It can range from anything from like the levels themselves shifting around to just barrel rolling across the stage, giving you an issue. But at the end of the day, you got to navigate the crazy accidents that can occur in your kitchen, as well as just getting the orders right. Now, what's interesting about this game is a few things. One, I mentioned earlier, this is a single player Overcooked. Overcooked was designed to be a multiplayer chaotic game. There is a single player mode in that game, but I don't think I've ever met a person that said, you know what I really prefer at Overcooked? Playing it alone. And that is what this is. And it definitely shows in how rough it can get by being a single player game. Because, give you an example, what I forgot to mention in all the other stuff is that when the food is served, eventually a dirty plate comes back. You start with a few clean plates, but eventually you're going to start washing plates in order to cook new food. But the train of orders doesn't stop. So if you've got an array of plates available, it gets chaotic, but generally I'm able to handle the orders that are coming in.
Yeah.
The moment washing plates becomes a step, forget it. Everything goes to shit. It breaks my kitchen. There's no other player that can come in there and do the do for me to wash some plates for me, and it gets rough. Now, in their defense, they intentionally designed it to be a lone experience, meaning that the score is attainable by a lone player. So it's not like it's impossible. But what I will say, though, is that it just loses a certain bit of charm when you're doing it all by yourself. And also that ability to just kind of coordinate and get stuff done on the level to get, you know, get things done and get those points. But functionality-wise, the game is solid. It does what it sets out to do. Though the one negative I have in that regard, which I think they could totally patch, or maybe it's just me, is there's like I'm not sure if it's a lag in the input or if it's just the way I'm receiving it in my head to make the connections. But like, so when you're playing a game like this, speed is key, which means you want to run up to the plate, run up to the thing, get the item, run to the chopping board, mash that X button, put it in the plate, do it all like snappy, snappy, snappy. But for some reason, I have had multiple moments where I found myself like running to the thing and I want to hit the button to put it somewhere, but it's like the game isn't registering that I'm there yet. So it's like, no, you're slightly behind. So I was like, shoot. Now I got to do it again. Got to turn and do it again. And it's like it's designed to be slower, like from an input perspective, but the game demands that you're quick, which means it needs to be very snappy. Have you or Chris played Overcooked before?
I've played Overcooked, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
So you guys probably know what I mean in that game because snappiness is on there. Like if you run to the counter and you hit X, it's immediate. You know you're hitting X at the right spot on the counter. You're getting shit done. Like, there's no, oh, crap, I hit X, but I was just not quite at the countertop, so I didn't pick up the onion. Like, no, you picked that fucking onion up. And in this game, it's like there's like a slight lag there, something that you could probably adjust to, but that also means that by adjusting to it, I ultimately played a little bit slower than I would have liked. So that was a bit of a pain in the butt. But outside of that aspect and the lack of multiplayer, this is still that game at its core, which means you've got crazy, wacky kitchen situations. You've got a lot of orders coming in, and you're pulling your hair out trying to get it all done. It's the nature of the beast, and these beasts can take care of business if you put up a little bit of dour time just to push through the issue that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Okay.
As I say, well, as it stands, $15 for the game on Xbox and PlayStation, $20 on the Switch. What are your thoughts?
I got to be honest here. Usually I try not to do the whole compare to other games and just try to rate a game in its own right. But this game is so much like Overcooked that I have to say, if you don't own Overcooked, even if you have an affinity for this movie, buy Overcooked first. There's no question. Just buy Overcooked first. And if you really need more kitchens, buy this game. The game is good in its own right. I'd give it a try at least. But buy
Overcooked is better. First. Yeah.
Well, yeah, just do that and you'll be good.
All right. Moving on. Next game is Rift Adventure, developed by Game Brew Studio, published by Cubite Interactive, released September 16th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $7.99. Rift Adventure is a 2D platformer of action and adventure and RPG elements with retro pixel art style that seeks to educate and raise awareness of young people, teenagers, and also homesick players about tax education, citizenship, and cause and consequence of your actions. Chris, what the hell is going on in Rift Adventure?
I know. I played the game before I read the description, and indeed, they do kind of teach you about the in a subtle way, I guess, but they do teach you about the relationship between paying taxes and infrastructure. Assuming that your government is interested in, building infrastructure with your tax dollars instead of invading other countries for 20 years. but that's not really what the game is about. So what it is about is that, there's a little bunny fufu and a kitty lady with a halter top on, I don't know, who are going on a grand adventure. I guess they are thieves or pirates or something. I think they're pirates. And they run afoul of a evil wizard who steals away the cat lady. And so, at least for the first part of the game, you play as the bunny rabbit man who is on a mission to delve deep into the dungeon and rescue his partner. Partner in the cowboy sense, I think. So it's a little bit of it's like a Metroidvania type of thing because all the elements of going into a dungeon and, clearing it out and then going back to the hub town up above and buying new items and, buying stuff that improves every time you clear a new area. Like all that's there. But it's kind of your character's a rabbit. He's already got the double jump, you know? Like, there's not a whole lot of, like, different gameplay things that get introduced. Now, the way that the hub town works is what's kind of interesting here, at least for the ideas they were going for. So you've got, of course, your blacksmith, who is all these creatures, by the way, are animals, and not in like the sexy way, which I was relieved about. They're like actually just goofy ass animals. Like the mayor is a rhinoceros and the blacksmith is a giraffe lady, and like it doesn't seem like she can do the job, but I guess she does. Anyways. Oh, and the restaurateur is a big octopus who is nowhere near the water. So that's, you know, that's alarming. But anyway. So yeah, there's like critters. And so here's the thing, is that every time you go into the dungeon is not a large interconnected thing like you would expect. What it is it's a series of stages, apparently 20, because there's 20 on the like overworld map type of thing. Maybe there's like a different dungeon once you get to 20. I didn't get to 20 for reasons I'll explain in a bit. But once you clear them out, then a turn passes, and it always tells you, like, when you're in the hub town, what turn you're on. So you're like turn 1 of 20. If you replay a stage to get more money or something like that, because you don't get experience points in this game either, which to me is a bummer, especially considering how little life our little bunny man has when it comes to dealing with these foes. I would really have loved a level up system in this game. But there is a money system. Now, when you get back to the hub town, it's interesting because, yeah, you go to the blacksmith and buy your new weapon. You know, you go to the squid and, or sorry, octopus, no offense to any cephalopods in the audience. I misspoke. Anyways, you go to the octopus and buy like, you know, a carrot, literally one of the food items is a carrot. And I was pretty happy about that. Or, you know, you go to like, the medic's tent and get like healed up or whatever, which is another weird thing. I don't even feel like really going into that though. You spend all this money and get all this stuff done, and you know that makes your character better equipped for the next stage. However, right at the end of town, there's this little cart with this little, you know, shady looking like green rodent. I don't know. I don't actually know what he is. He seems like he's a frog, maybe a mouse. I think he's a frog. He just has a weird face. You know, that's racist of me to say, but he does have like big like mouse ears, but also webbed feet. So I don't know. So your little frog mouse sells all the same items that you can get in the town, but at almost half the cost. So if you're like strapped for cash and you want that dagger, then you could buy it from this guy for like 200 instead of the 300 that the giraffe's selling it for. Now, if you do that, you're not putting taxes back into town because this little drifter is not paying his taxes. So the next time you clear a stage, you might not get new items in the shop. So that's the whole thing about taxes and consequences and stuff. If you pay the higher price to buy the item from someone in town, then your town is set up to improve its infrastructure and provide you with more stuff for the next couple of stages or whatever. So that's interesting. I like the system. It feels incomplete, but maybe it blossoms into something else later in the game. Now, there's other things that happen in the game, too, is that the town gets invaded, and they tell you what turn the town's going to get invaded on. And this was a bizarre thing for me because, you know, of course, this is a brand new game and it's cheap, so nobody's written about it. I literally couldn't look it up anywhere. So I just was kind of on my own devices here. Whenever a few turns later, you know, some lizard dudes attack or something, like some bad guys attack. Actually, I'm sorry, the lizards are on your side. And directly after the stage, with no chance to heal if you took any damage, directly after that stage, you have to help them fight off these other monsters. And I got killed immediately because I had only 1 point of health getting out of the third stage. And yeah, sure enough, you lose and then your town levels down.
Oh.
Yeah, and then you have to work to get it back up. And I don't see any recourse because they're like, well, the next invasion's going to happen in 3 more turns. I'm like, well, then I have to like clear 3 more brand new dungeon segments to get to this next thing and supposedly, you know, lose another level if I don't do it right. So it's like, it seems my recourse is to just start the entire game over because I don't think there's a way to redo that. Hmm. So, like, that's weird, but it is a part of it. Now, the action, like I said, it's... Well, let's talk about, like, the simple things. I started with the complicated things. The simple things is that it has a really cool little soundtrack. It has great pixel art. The entire thing is done up in pixel art with these very chunky sprites. You know, not a whole lot of pixels in play here, but they're, you know, very bright and colorful. Backgrounds are amazing. Action feels good. The difficulty trends high because your bunny guy has not the best defenses, and armor only raises your HP. It doesn't actually reduce the amount of damage enemies do to you, and there's no level up system. And you're up against enemies that are as fast, if not faster than you, if they have weapons, or you're just like, you know, you might get picked apart by little bats and stuff that just like kind of, you know, just eat up your life over time. And they're just too numerous to like really deal with. It's not bad. I mean, you will find yourself like, you know, getting through stages just fine, you know, and with the odd boss and everything like that. And eventually you do get that cat lady on your side. But yeah, it's interesting because it's pretty hard to progress if that particular stage is hard, but you don't have like an upgraded weapon or anything like that to deal with this new harder stage. So it's a real interesting one, but you know, I kind of like where they're going, but it feels like they're maybe not quite there.
Yeah. Well, as it stands, it's only $8. What do you think?
Yeah, $8. It's fine. Go ahead and get it. I mean, there's enough quality here for $8, for gosh sakes.
Cool.
If this was like a one of those $20, like, you know, indie, you know, darling type of titles, I would say look elsewhere. But and I think it's on sale right now, too. So, you know, go ahead and check it out.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Next up is Concordia Digital Edition, developed and published by Akram Digital, releasing September 28th on Steam, iOS, and Android, coming soon to Switch as well. We don't have any pricing info on hand, but when we have more info, we will be sure to let you know. Concordia Digital Edition is a faithful adaptation of a strategic board game ranked in the top 20 board games of all time. Plan ahead and make crucial decisions every turn. Always be prepared to make a trade-off. Your actions can very well benefit other players as well as yourself. Pernell, since we don't have any pricing, we can't really give this a full-on review, so preview it for us. Tell us, what is Concordia?
Concordia is a game that on the surface seems like it may be really complicated to play, a heavy game, but in reality, after sitting down with it for a while, it's actually fairly easy to understand. It's just... The complexity comes in the form of just, like, making decisions, which, let's be real, can be really freaking tough. Analysis paralysis is a real thing. But the way this game functions is you play... I don't even honestly know what you play as, because I just toned out on the idea. But I just know you're basically like a person trying to expand their empire across the Mediterranean environment. Though your other maps you can unlock, so it's not even locked to that specific location. It's just a location that you choose for that gameplay session. You try to expand, like, you know, your influence in that environment and acquire more money, or rather victory points, than the other players. But how do you actually do this? Well, you start out at a center, like, location or a city, right? And at the beginning of the game, there are a bunch of different tiles that are on the board. And they have individual tokens placed on them. It's random every game. And these tokens represent resources. Now, on each turn, you can move one of your colonists, either by boat or by land, a certain number of spaces. Usually it starts out with two spaces, but as you get more colonists, you can move them more spaces than that, because based on the number of colonists on the board. Just for the record, this is going to be really weird, because explaining a board game without the physical map on the screen is tough. but what ends up happening is you can move players based off of actions that are determined by a deck that you start out with and you can add on to as you go. So, for example, you might want to say move to construct in a specific environment, like an area. It's two spaces away. You have two colonists on the board, so you can play your architect card, which allows you to move two spaces. you move your guy to that location. And then that architect card also allows you to spend resources that you have in your inventory to build towns in those locations if you so choose to do so and can afford it. It costs resources and money to do that. Now, if you decide to build houses in these environments, you will get essentially like influence in that region. So later on, someone can play another card that's referred to as prestige. And if you play the prestige card on that region, you'll get a boon for any house you have in a location in that region. That's one of the elements where they said that you can help other players, because when you use prestige in a region, it doesn't just benefit you, it benefits everyone who's established, you know, prominence there. Now, if someone wants to try to build behind you in the same town, they can do that. They have to pay the resource cost that's associated with it, but they also have to pay gold to do so too, like additional money beyond what you paid. So it pays to be first, but if you can't be, then make sure that you only build when you really want something to come off of it. Now, that's the movement ability that takes place in the game. But in addition to that, there's a couple other things. There's like production elements where you can spend one of your cards to allow you to like produce resources on areas that you're in. You can spend a card to go to like what's like a card market in the upper corner of the basically in the area where you can choose from a variety of cards that are up for sale that can add to the deck you're playing with. So if you wanted to build beyond your starting deck of cards, which you will want to do so you can have more actions and powers, you'll spend resources and money to do it up there. And it is a moving market. So there's like six spaces that go across, and every card from left to right has a cost that increases the further to the right you go. So if you want to buy the card that comes off the deck immediately, it's going to cost you two of the most expensive resources on the board and something else, which is the price on the card itself. Every time you buy a card off the market, though, they shift to the left. So eventually the cards get cheaper. So it becomes a matter of questioning if you can wait until it becomes cheaper or if you think someone will actually just take the plunge and buy it before you do. So things to think about. And beyond that, there's another interesting aspect of this game, too, in that one of the cards you start out with and also a card you could potentially buy, there's like a copy card. So when you play cards from your deck, they go to a discard pile, your personal discard pile. But a person behind you could then play this particular card that lets them copy the action that you took. So even if you buy a cool card that you see that the other person might have wished they bought, that person could still piggyback off of you. Of course, since that card type is limited, you'll find yourself to want to kind of reserve use of it until just the right time, which becomes tough when it's like five actions you want to be able to take, but you can only use it one time. So you still ultimately means you're going to want to get the good cards yourself, but you're not completely locked out if you can't get one. So you're playing through your deck of cards. Typically in a deck builder, you will refresh your cards when you expend all of them. So you'll get to the bottom of your hand, you'll put them in the discard, run out of cards in your deck, you'll take the discard, shuffle them, and pick them back up. Well, in this game, the way that renewing your hand works is there's a card in your hand called Tribute. When you play the Tribute card, it allows you to pick up every card you've already played and put it back in your hand. And in addition to that, you can spend resources to buy a new colonist, either a land colonist or a sea colonist, and put them on the board, which gives you more movement power and more versatility. And like, if you want to send your guys off in different directions or what have you, and you're going to want to do that because, again, there's going to be a bit of a race to get more points and get areas established before other players can come in and do it. That way you don't have to pay the extended costs to develop after they do. The game ultimately ends when either someone builds all 15 of their houses or all the cards in the market get purchased. So both conditions are totally attainable, but it becomes a definite matter of who's going to get there first, because the game itself is a large matter of balancing choices. Are you going to use your movement card to move around the board? Are you going to use your mercantile card to actually go to the market, which allows you to then purchase and sell resources to kind of like, sort of like an exchange system? You know, sell a thing for 5 gold and then pay for another one with 7 gold if it's something you really want for an action in the future. Do you want to buy stuff from the market, increase your hand actions? Do you want to have less cards in your hand because you want to be able to use that Tribute card quicker and start refreshing your hand again? there is a lot to balance here for so few actions. But honestly, playing this game, because I'd heard of it and I'd seen it talked about, and it's still very relevant. The original game came out in 2013, and people were buying this and the expansion Salsa and Venus from Gen Con just this week. So, like, it still holds tons of weight in the social gaming, board gaming sphere. And I can totally see why it does. Like, the game itself is a ton of fun. The interface online is even pretty good, too. Like, I never found myself fighting with the interface. It's easy to navigate. The menu options are vast in that you can play it in windowed mode, or you can play it in full screen mode. You can choose a resolution. I was playing it on my Windows 7 machine, and it had no issues running whatsoever. Like, it ran fine on there.
I like that you still use that one.
It's honestly kind of a good metric when you think about it. Like, because I have both that machine. I have, like, a machine I really shouldn't be using anymore, and I have a laptop that, at least when I bought it, was top of the line. So I can go from worst to best instantly and be like, okay, this game works well here, but it works terribly here. But in this case, it works fine. Like, it's accessible to anybody's laptop, pretty much, or PC. Unless you're running XP, in which case you're more fucked than I am. Honestly, the interface is good. The one downside, and this is just me, but this is also kind of a thing that I'm noticed all these board games do, is that the music will put you the hell to sleep. I think they choose it because they want to fit the theme that the game takes place in, and it's always like some like really relaxing tune, which even though the game is fun and engaging, you're still really running your brain, and you will get tired if you're already tired coming in. So I recommend either talking to people, playing your own music, or something. But otherwise, this game is a fantastic time. And don't quote me on this because I didn't get to test it, but the menu gave me the genuine impression that you can play multiplayer on this game with people who don't own it. They just have to be on your friends list on Steam. Which means they could just, like, I guess, download a version of it and just play with you. But I need to double check that to confirm. So don't quote me on it. I'm just saying that's something that you might want to look into if that's like the one aspect of the game that's holding you back from buying it.
I am quoting you on that. Got it.
Well, God damn it. Fine. Fine. Well, I still think people should buy it anyway. So
I was going to say, we don't have pricing, so we can't really say whether or not to buy it or not. But is it like, what kind of price would you be okay paying on this?
I'm genuinely expecting this to go for $20 to $30, in which case I think it's totally fine. They're going to try to hit people on the DLC market, though, because
they have like six DLC packs. One of them's free, five of them are paid, and then they have a season pass that I'm going to assume has all of it. But again, no pricing on that yet. We'll find out probably in the next week or so. So I'm sure next week we could update with our thoughts on the pricing.
So, but what I will say, since I can't say the pricing, since through the pricing, I can say that if it's in the range that I'm thinking about, that I mentioned earlier, this will be a definite buy, because the main boxed game still retails for like 60 bones, even after being released in 2013, and the expansions aren't much cheaper than that, if not equivalent price. And there appeared to be more maps available in this version of the game than the actual physical game has available, probably because it's easier to have a digital screen in a data file than it is to actually print paper, you know, cardboard maps and distribute them across a bunch of stores.
You would think so.
But then the Fire Nation tactic proved me very wrong. But yeah, honestly, I think this game is totally worth that much money. It's a great time. It is a thinker game. This is the kind of game that will get you kicked out of parties because you're not cool enough. It's that kind of a thing. And I'm fine with that because that's my kind of game.
Did you get kicked out of a party for liking this game?
Oh, I've got kicked. I got knocked on dating sites for liking this kind of game. It sucks. My God, I don't even know how to answer that. You like board games? Ugh.
Well, my sister apparently just got banned from Tinder, so that's funny as hell.
Wait, what?
I don't know what she did. I don't know what the hell she did. Like, she's always like a super smart ass when people message her. It's like, what's up, babe? And she's just like, blow me. She doesn't put up with any shit, and it's hilarious. Like,
Don't get me wrong. I have no qualms with the not putting up with shit, but I'm also saying that's likely why she got probably.
It's funny though. Anyway, that has nothing to do with games. Next game to talk about is called Golf Peaks, developed by Afterburn, published by 7Levels, released September 21st on Xbox One for $4.99. No understanding of golf is required. Just grab your controllers and conquer the mountain peaks by making your way to the hole. However, not in the usual skill shot-based style. Instead, plan your strategy and use action cards to move the ball. Chris, tell us about Golf Peaks.
All right, well, I believe that I reviewed this on Switch a while ago, but I think we're talking about Xbox now, yes, right?
We're talking about the Xbox release. You're just going to go over some of the basics. I've been playing the Xbox release all day today. It plays exactly like the Switch game. So it's cool. It's exactly the same. It's adorable. It looks great. It plays great. So what is
like
the game?
It's like 0% golf. Yeah, so it is a game where you take a ball and you try to put it in a very small hole in a place, and that in that sense it is like golf. But instead of using a stick, you play a card to move it a specific amount of squares on a playing board. Now this playing board is basically just a bunch of blocks in outer space, you know. It's not just like a grid, like a Kirby's Dream Course, which is also very golf adjacent, but not quite golf. But yeah, the ball basically moves the exact amount of spaces that are detailed on the card, and the card will have combinations on it. So for instance, if it's got a two with like a line around it, that means that the ball is going to go up, like bounce up and go two spaces. So that will get you like over a gap, let's say, because you don't want your golf ball to fall into an infinite void.
That's never fun.
Exactly.
Hard to get and back.
If the ball keeps rolling, that will be detailed on the card. There might be an underlined one after the two. So that means that it's going to bounce two spaces and then roll for one space. You can choose any of these cards to play at any time, and the strategy involved is trying to get the right combination of cards and directions. You can go in any of the cardinal directions, although this thing is skewed to a three-quarter angle, so basically any diagonal direction. It's isometric. It's choosing the correct sequence of cards to play to get that ball into that hole using the increasingly absurd ways that these golf courses, quote unquote, heavy finger quotes, are laid out. Kirby's Dream Course haunts my dreams too. Yeah, I streamed it a couple of times, and holy geez, game is so hard.
I love Kirby's Dream Course.
It is good, but it's so hard.
It's one of my favorite games.
I used to rent that all the time as a kid.
Nice.
Remember Blockbuster, kids? Hey, kids, remember Blockbuster? Oh my god, I'm old. So Golf Peaks. It's adorable.
Yeah, it's adorable and it's fun. It's a thinker's game for sure.
Definitely more puzzle than golf. I mean the aesthetics are golf related, but it's not at all a golf game. It is absolutely 100% a puzzle game.
It's golf by way of playing cards.
Yes. So $5, what do you think of it?
Yeah, this one's it's a great puzzle game. So I would give it a recommendation based on that. Its proximity to golf is like I said, Kirby's Dream Course. It's near there. Golf is like the way it's framed, but it's a whole different experience and one worth having. So go ahead and pick it up.
I agree. $5, worth picking up. I bought it today and I'm having a blast with it. Go to the credits, nice, scroll all the way down. You'll find a secret. Enjoy your achievement, people. Final game to talk about is called Broken Blades, developed and published by Golden Egg Studio and West Wind Games. It released September 13th on Steam for $1.99. Avoid traps, upgrade your sword, and reach powerful bosses to find a way out of the underworld. Enter the world of Broken Blades and let yourself be carried away by the adventure. Chris, tell us about Broken Blades.
Oh, God. Okay. So, this is another kind of feels like a Metroidvania or even like a roguelike, but with a difference. So Broken Blades has you controlling what looks, it's like the most dour, bored-looking knight. he looks like a little webcomic cartoon, like, you know, like a Cyanide and Happiness kind of, like, low, you know, low-detail kind of goofball. But he's just got, like, this meh kind of face all the time, which is funny to me. That's actually almost my favorite part of the game. And yeah, he gets dropped into this dungeon. You must fight enemies and upgrade your character through randomized enemy drops. The enemies themselves also sometimes vary, but unlike a roguelike, the stage never changes. It's always the same stage. So, like, it plays, like I said, it plays like a roguelike, but without the random element in the stage. So, like, it's interesting because, yeah, here's the thing about this game. If you die, you start all over. Unless you, maybe you start over in the next stage if you beat the first boss, but I can tell you I did not do that because this game is very, very hard. And the game does not have any sort of, like, it doesn't have anything there to kind of, like, help you out. So, you know, it's a running, jumping, and double jumping, hack and slashy type of thing, where you fight, like, at least in the first stage I got stuck on, you fight, like, bats and rats and little slugs and stuff like that, and, you know, dodge fire traps and whatnot. And every now and then an enemy will drop a card, and you pick up the card, and it will ask you, it will have you choose between two upgrades to your character. So it might get Life is Good, which presumably adds to your HP score, but there's no numbers associated with your HP, and you take so much damage from every enemy that it's hard to tell whether you're taking less damage. So, you know, it's like, I suppose this power-up works. Or you might get, like, a Brute, which will make you, like, stronger. And then there's a separate one that's, like, Swordmaster, and I guess that also makes you stronger? Certain cards make you stronger against certain enemies. And all of that, you know, you can build your character up with those cards and kind of customize them in a way that you cannot check, because there's no pause option menu. There's no menu at all. There's no way to tell even what cards you've picked up. You just have to know.
That's once not you die, good.
Yeah, and once you die, you lose them all. So, and you, here's the other element. You start off with a little, like, a sword that's very short. It's, like, about the size of your hand. It reminds me of Lagoon on the Super Nintendo. with the little, you know, silverware. And, but enemies will randomly drop pieces of the blade, and it takes you to a menu where you choose, like, it shows your sword, like, cut away into sections, and you choose which part of the sword you want that blade to go to, so that it makes your sword bigger, although it swings slower, but at least it raises your power. The thing is, like, even though it gives you those options, you only have the one option. It's just whatever is, you know, closest to the bottom, because that's how swords work. Like, you can't have a sword in two pieces and swing it all at the same time. So I don't know why that even was there. And if you pick up that piece, it forces you into that menu to, like, put the sword onto, you know, to extend your sword, basically. It does not pause the action when you're doing that. So if you're fighting two enemies, one of them drops a blade, and you accidentally pick up the blade, you gotta set that blade before you can fight the other enemy. I got eaten by a slug because I got a drop from a bat. But anyway, so it's an interesting little game, and I like where they're going. But, you know, at a certain point, I think when you're going for a budget release, you know, there's some concessions you just got to make. You can't just take everything out in the name of minimalism and, you know, and then slap a tiny price tag on it. I mean, if they would have, like, really worked on this thing based on just kind of the goofballiness of it and, like, a couple of the gameplay elements that I did like, I mean, this could have been, like, a $5 or $10 game if they would have, you know, worked on it. But,
well, what could they do to improve it?
Definitely a pause menu, a way to find out, a way to figure out, like, and, you know, a menu that actually pauses. Like, don't do the live action menu. Nobody likes that ever. Even in the good games, it's not good. Anyways, like, yeah, just a way to track what you got. Again, if I would have been able to beat the boss, like, because here's the thing is that, you know, you get through this whole stage and one enemy drops one apple. That's usually what happens. And one apple will get you about 30% of your life back. Enemies take about 25% of your life at minimum. And so you get all the way through this thing and you get to this boss. At best, you have like two hits to deal with this boss and one apple. So it's like, I don't know how they expect anybody to beat this boss. And then, and you do have a Dark Souls style roll, by the way. I maybe that factors in. I don't know. It just made me sail into more enemies. But, you know, if there was like a way to maybe, if you're going to make the character start over, like maybe let him keep some of those cards or something. I don't know. Like, it's not a roguelike, so why are you making the character start all over every time? It's like you're not randomizing the dungeon. It's the same thing. So it's like, you know, eventually you're just going to get tired of playing that same level over and over. So, yeah, I think there's like some stuff they could work with on the bones of this thing. But, you know, it is a decent enough challenge for sure. If anybody wants to like pay $2 to have a really difficult time.
Oh, well, is it worth dropping $2?
I'm going to say not really at this point. But
well, hopefully they work on it. And if they do, we could always take another look at it. But
yeah, no problem.
All right. We are done. Made it through another episode. Thanks to you two for being here. Especially thanks for being here because you're still here. that's
AKA no thanks to Cole.
Oh, that's hard to say. That's mean to say.
I was interpreting.
yeah. I can't thank Cole enough for her time on the show. Do either of you have anything that you want to say before we wrap things up?
I just think she's great.
Well, I did have a question and then nothing to say. Is like, when did she start?
Oh, God, I don't even know. It's been years.
She was all here before. Was she on before I started? I want to say she was.
I really don't know. I don't know the timeline. I've been doing this for so long, so many years and so many episodes. I do not know the timeline anymore. I
totally get it. Trust
like,
me.
Like I know my co-host's timeline and that's about it. But everyone else, like all the reviewers, there have been so many people that have come and gone. And,
Cole's a co-host though.
Yeah, but I'm like, I don't know. I don't remember when you guys first started doing reviews. Chris has been around since like episode 10.
I know that. I got you. I started at the end of 2016.
I really don't know. I don't know the year.
Well, then the other thing I was going to say is,
I don't know. Yeah, years.
She is appreciated. And honestly, you know, she put in her time. It was a good time. And now she's got some shit to take care of, and indeed, she's going to kick that chick's ass. So, hey, that's how it goes. We all have that stuff that happens eventually, you know.
Thanks to Jacob for not being here on Tuesday.
Damn.
Damn. Oh, shit. God. So, anyone
start showing up.
On that note, does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Just bye, Cole. We love you.
We do love you, Cole. Be well, friend.